Trump in Davos, it's an interesting story. Our commander in chief is now in Davos, although he was proclaimed to be a self-made anti-globalist, going against, you know, unfair trade practices and TTIP, TTP, and what have you. Now he's hobnobbing with the movers and shakers of our societies. So it's kind of interesting position to be in right now, especially where he's basically a major salesman for to our nation. He's basically telling everyone that America is a great place to invest money in. People should just go in, you know, and spend the money, create jobs, which actually idea is maybe sound in itself. But the problem is, you know, most of the manufacturing capacity that we have in our country, just like in Europe, is currently outsourced. So there's not even a lot of technological know-how. There was a big news this morning that state of Georgia has adopted a German style program of apprenticeship,
yeah,
where they basically will be training young people to become sort of like a smart technology manufacturers, taking from a high school up to the, you know, to the college level, getting associate degree in smart manufacturing. This basically comes from the idea of Mittelstand in Germany. So this is going to be implemented the first state in the U.S. as a pilot program. So this will be interesting how this all develops itself.
Is that important? What will it change?
Well, I think it's maybe a first step in the right direction, to be honest. But I think there is no way to going back into the times where back in the 50s, when the head of the GM said, you know, what's good for GM is good for the America. This reality just doesn't exist anymore. For the fact that actually last week there was the first milestone ever in American history where foreign car manufacturers in the United States made more cars here than American automakers. So this gives you the dynamics of our manufacturing prowess as far as the big ticket items, of course, except of military. Sector, because military sector exclusively has everything made here in the United States. And some components are coming from Korea and Japan mostly, some to a small degree, but majority of stuff is still made here.
Okay.
And so
by the time we broadcast this, he will have made his speech. Is there a certain expectation of what Trump will do in Davos or does in Davos?
Well, I think U.S. media generally is now fishing for any kind of controversial comment that he's going to make that's not going to be problems of reality, and they were already attacking him for association of being, you know, there to begin with the globalists, but he was riding on platform of anti-globalism. I think the speech that
did he really say that he was against trade deals? He just said that he's not against trade deals, but he just said that the counterparties, the other part of the agreement, always get too good a deal. That was his point. Whether that's true or not is another matter, but that's what he says.
Well, that's what he says, but I think the general feeling among his base was that he's going to be anti-globalist to the degree where he's going to either destroy all the trade agreements, and it happened with TTP, and he's going to put bilateral agreements in its place. It's really not that simple, because each market is not equal. I mean, you know, the market of Germany or, let's say, France versus somewhere in Luxembourg or versus somewhere in West Africa. Every country has different dynamics, both economic, political, and social. And every country has different, you know, mechanisms to manage its own trade imbalances or trade, you know, of trade relationships with different countries. So it's like sort of kind of throwing all the pieces of, you know, of the puzzles on the table.
Well, we got a common European market. I mean, it's tuned to the German economy to some extent, to a large extent, but it's the rules and regulations are quite uniform throughout Europe. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
Europe is an exception to the degree. I agree with that. However, you know, we try to basically reinvent the wheel. That's already been reinvented. I'm not for trade agreements per se, because I think generally there can be very deceptive, and TTP and TTIP in this case was a particular example of a bad trade deal when it comes to not only sovereignty, but also the accountability for anything that goes wrong, the quote-unquote creation of the judicial panels or corporate lawyers that were supposed to be adjudicating any kind of degree of conflict or conflict of interest between different parties. that in itself smacks as a, you know, it's not only as an illegal instrument, because ultimately, you know, the law of the land should adjudicate any kind of degree of conflicts of disputes, not some appointed people somewhere.
Yeah. Right. So you're referring to the arbitration clauses and the exactly. ISDS clauses, yes.
Exactly. This is basically extrajudicial, and I think it even flies in the face of many countries' constitutions, because you really cannot have an extraterritorial body deciding what's really good for the country when it comes to its own internal policies, such as, let's say, environmental protection, workers' protection, you name it. So this is in itself, it was basically sort of like a testing ground in a way, where, you know, how to kind of ramp up this neoliberal order into something that actually is more not only pan-European, but I think, you know, worldwide. Like, it's almost a accusation of many Trump supporters of creation of the so-called, you know, world government of sorts. And kind of, you can see this from that point of view, that a lot of those worries and fears are justified. But I think it's generally Trump is there for his own self-promotion. It also gives him a lot of respite to kind of leave United States, kind of be away from the eye of the media here, because, you know, they've been writing him like you wouldn't believe. I don't know any any official of the U.S. government, or any government for the matter, that had so much spotlight being put on. Whether justifiable or not is a completely different story, but it's just the degree where he goes over there, he's basically gets a degree of respite. So I think he kind of welcomes that in a way. But I think generally his presentation is not going to be as much as controversial as completely immaterial, especially where, you know, we're talking about different dynamics that take, frankly, decades to kind of formulate themselves into social economic policy. And having even 8 years of Obama or 4 years of Trump or more, it's really not going to change those dynamics. Definitely it's going to be sort of kind of long managed process in a way. So he's just there because he has to be there. You know, he's a quote-unquote leader of the free world. As pitiful and sad this, you know, this kind of leadership can be, but it's, you know, at least nominally, he's there. So I think this is something that kind of has to be kind of looked at this prism, that with him or without him, it's definitely a bad proposition. I'm very much a critical person of Davos, because I simply cannot believe that, you know, that $750,000, that's how much the membership per person costs there to be there. You know, shouldn't that money be kind of used better, you know, to alleviate poverty in Africa or South America or some other place? I mean, just from, you know, from the point of idle talk.
That's interesting, because we got our, it's kind of prime minister, the head of the local government, the Flemish government, and also one of the federal ministers, who's now going to be to lead the party for the local elections in Antwerp, but that's a separate matter. But both of them, there are several people are in Davos at the moment. So are those politicians also paying $750,000 a piece?
I think unless they're invited to be on a panel of speakers, I think yes, they are. I know for a fact that the Polish government is paying. They send several different people from the government itself. You know, and it's truly, I think it's scandalous that this type of degree of hobnobbing place for the wealthy and ultra rich.
So, and of course, because this is the organization that costs money, but is it the for-profit organization behind this? Because I've got no clue, really.
Obviously, it is. I mean, I know for a fact that to get a room in Davos, just like for journalism, because I have spoken to someone several years ago who's been there. You're talking about $400 or $500 per night, like a regular room.
Okay, but that's the local hotels who benefit outrageously from the whole concept. But I guess if you have a climate summit somewhere, I mean the hotels may also increase their prices. But I guess the UN doesn't try to cash on the climate conferences, or do they? So. But if you pay $700,000 just to attend, that money, $750,000, yeah. So that money must go somewhere, and more than than the cost.
Well, it definitely doesn't go to the people who need it most. That's for sure. I mean, where it goes, it can be a form of you know, argument and kind of interesting maybe idea for investigative journalism here. But frankly, it's outrageous, and specifically where at the end of the day, there's really no direct line between policymaking that becomes effective versus what actually has been agreed in Davos. I mean,
maybe that's a good thing.
Maybe it is a good thing. You're right. So yeah, but it's I don't know. I guess it's maybe a very the world's most expensive club for the wealthy and wealthy influencers to put its stamp on some kind of degree of policymaking.
Yeah,
I don't
our
know.
local
Maybe
politicians who
it's
go there, they seem to they're saying, "Oh, we're going there to create jobs, to get contracts and stuff."
that's ridiculous. I mean,
Yeah.
it's a basically everybody wants to go there because I think many, to be honest with you, looking for a self-centered, self-interest standpoint, a lot of people who are representing government who are actually going to be there, they're not going to be in the government forever, and maybe there is some career lying, after their governmental life. So it's sort of like kind of creating a path for to a successful career after they leave the government job, because a lot of these people then become very expensive lobbyists, working for the big corporations, whether it's spokespeople or PR people, you name it. So, or even business partners, some cases. So in a way, I think it's truly regrettable that this type of event takes place, where the better resources can be spent definitely in much more needed places. But it's the same as a World Economic Forum, which I covered in 2016 in Montreal. It's almost the same dynamics apply here. At the end of the day, there's just very little that's really tangible that's made out of this, and all the money that is actually spent, not mentioning the degree of pollution that's being created, specifically when it comes to climate issues, where, having several thousand people coming from all over the world, obviously that creates a lot of negative effect as far as pollution is concerned. Where at the end of the day, everybody's going to make some kind of feel-good declaration about something, and nothing really happens because the agenda is already preset no matter what happens.
Yeah, I
So,
just saw that some thousand, was it private or small jets arrive in Davos for the summit.
you're right. So here's the I guess it's a, I don't know, it's sort of degree of a Woodstock for the corporate elite. That's basically the best way to describe it.